Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to Meet the Author. My name is Denny Griffin. For the next half hour, next 45 minutes, I'm going to be your host. And my guest today, and it's a special day for the guest, my guest is Diane Fanning. Diane is a journalist and an Edgar Award finalist author of 8 true crime books. She's been featured on Court TV, the Discovery Channel, and local TV channels, as well as interviewed by countless radio stations across the United States and Canada. Her best-selling true crime books include Through the Window, Into the Water, Written in Blood, Gone Forever, Baby Be Mine, Under the Knife, Out There, and most recently, The Pastor's Wife. She has also written the first Molly Mullet mystery, Bite the Moon, and The Trophy Exchange is her first book in the Lucinda Pierce series. And the reason today is a special day is because her next Lucinda Pierce book, Punish the Deed, was released officially today. Diane, welcome back to Meet the Author.
Great to be here, Denny. How are you this evening?
I'm great, and I can imagine you are too with the book coming out today, huh?
Yes, it's terrific to have it officially released, and the most exciting part of it is that this is step two, but I've still got two books under contract for Lucinda.
Okay, well, I'm going to, a little later on, we're going to discuss some of your other projects that you've got in the oven. Let me just give out our phone number should anyone want to call in with a comment or question for you. You can reach Diane at 646-478-0982. That's 646-478-0982. Let's start out, Diane, if we can, about talking about Punish the Deed. And this is the second in the series. And for listeners not familiar with your books or with this particular series, do you want to give them a little background on what you're writing and so forth?
Well, the first book, The Trophy Exchange, introduced a character named Lucinda Pierce. She is a homicide detective who was drawn towards law enforcement because of bad things that happened in her childhood. And she also has experienced bad things as an adult. She was at a domestic violence call. She jumped in front of a woman to save her from being shot, and her one side of her face got shredded by a shotgun blast, and she lost an eye. And so she deals with more than just cop issues because she's got she had to go through rehabilitation for her eye, and she's got a series of reconstructive surgeries she's supposed to go through, but keeps putting off whenever she can. And she also faces the politics of a certain element wanting to make it illegal for a monocular police officer to be in the field. So she has a lot of things to deal with besides chasing down a serial killer in the first book, and she an entirely different kind of serial killer in the second, which is Punish the Deed.
And the premise is that no good deed goes unpunished.
Yes, because the people that are the victims are all heads of nonprofit organizations.
Let me, before I forget, give out your website also. For anybody who wants more information about Diane or her books, you can go to www.dianefanning, that's spelled DianeFanning.com. www.dianefanning.com. Is there any other website that people should check out for your stuff, or is that the main one they should go to?
Well, that's the main one with my books. I am also a contributor to the Women in Crime, Inc. blog spot, and I write on there about once a month. But That's pretty much, I got a MySpace page and a Facebook, so I'm out there to be found.
Okay.
Well, one of the things that I added recently to my website, which I think a lot of people will appreciate is I have a page called The Reading Room, mm-hmm. and it has nothing but book covers on it, and whichever cover you click on, you can then get to read a chapter from that book.
Oh, really? That's a nice
yes.
feature. Is
yeah.
it tough to put up something like that, or is it...
Actually, it was easier than I would have thought it would have been. It went pretty quick.
I'm total klutz when it comes to computers, so the idea, you know, when you were mentioning that, I said, oh boy, it would be great. I just don't know if I'd end up in a mental institution trying to get it done. But I might have to call on you for assistance. Diane, now you write both true crime and fiction.
Yes.
Do you have a preference? Is one your favorite as opposed to the other?
I like both of them for different reasons. The writing of fiction is a whole lot easier because you don't have to wait for return phone calls. You don't have to be constantly fact-checking. And quite frankly, you can kill whoever you want. With true crime, you're stuck with whoever is the victim, and there's a tragedy connected with that. But no matter how many people you kill in a fiction book, when it's all over, you really don't have any grieving family around. So I really like that, and I also like the solitary element of being by myself, working by myself, without really having much human interaction. But at the same time, I love people. And so it's really great to switch over to true crime where interacting with people is necessary. You have interviews to do. You've got to go in and get copies of documents, and you have to talk to people to do that. And there is a lot of interaction with people and understanding people and being with people. And there's the research, and I love doing the research. You know, I was one of those high school nerds that was excited when we got assigned a term paper. So I love the research, I love the interviews, and so there are things about that. And I think, too, that, you know, I look back on what I've done with my true crime books and realize I've done things that really help people.
And that's a good feeling, right?
Yes, yes.
Diane, let me interrupt you just a second here. We have a caller on the line, and I want to get back to this true crime versus fiction in a minute, but let's take the caller first, okay?
Okay.
Caller from 417, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello, this is LJ. Hi, Diane.
Hello.
From Peterson.
Uh-huh.
Hi, girl. Hey, speaking of help, I'm doing good, but speaking of helping people, thank you for my Tommy Lynn Sells help last year and for your Julia Harper saving her, really.
Well, thank you. That was a pretty remarkable thing. In some ways, I feel I don't deserve that much thanks because it sort of fell into my lap. But I guess.
Oh, I disagree, but okay.
I mean, you know, well, I managed to get what I got, and... And because of that, I was able to help let Julie Ray Harper get a new trial, and she was a wrongfully convicted woman.
She was. And you stood up, really, you stood up for somebody who really could not stand up for herself at that point. But I have a real quick question about Mike Peterson. And I think most people know here that you wrote Written in Blood, which is the book, if you're going to read that, but... do you think now that maybe his appeals have been pretty much run into the ground, that maybe somebody might come forward now about the Germany Liz Ratliff thing? Is there any chance at all?
I think that the appeals had to be run into the ground, which it looks like right now there's nothing left.
I think
and
so.
And if that is
owls.
It'll take a little bit of time for that to settle in and be accepted. And if someone is going to come forward in either to confirm what actually happened with Kathleen or to straighten out the record on Liz Ratliff, this is the time it's going to happen.
You know, by the way, just today, Liz's sister, I think you know who I'm talking about, found me on Facebook. So I don't think we're alone in thinking that maybe something might be shaking out, hopefully.
That would be great. That would
wouldn't
be great.
It be? Wouldn't it be?
Because I think Liz Ratliff has gone far too long without justice.
I do, too. I do, too. Well, okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, LJ. Talk
okay.
to you soon.
Bye.
Thanks
Bye.
For the call. Bye-bye. Interesting. I'm not really familiar with the case you were discussing, but it sounded like an interesting
Well, I'll give you the brief rundown. Michael
sure.
Peterson was a New York Times bestselling novelist, a Vietnam War hero, decorated, a candidate for mayor in the city of Durham, and the owner of the single largest home in all of Durham, North Carolina. He was married to a woman who was very smart. She was the very first woman ever accepted to the School of Engineering at Duke University. And she was also a patron of the arts. And a less likely to be a victim woman you've never seen. I mean, she was strong. She was competent. And it was just amazing that she became a victim in her own home and at the hand of her husband. And after she died, it was discovered that There was another woman 18 years earlier who had been found dead at the foot of the stairs, and no one saw foul play in that. But Michael Peterson was also the last person to see her. And when her body was exhumed, the marks on the back of her skull were very similar to the ones on Kathleen Peterson's skull. And he was found guilty and given life without parole for Kathleen's murder. But the family of Liz Ratliff wants justice for their family member, too. And there's strong hope that something will come to break that case open and get it prosecuted.
Boy, how sweet that would be, huh?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
I share your feeling, I think, that the victims need and the victims' families need justice. And well, what's the old thing about justice delayed is justice denied. And so I'm a believer in that, I think. These things need to be resolved as
yes.
quickly as possible. I'd like to a couple of things before we, or one thing actually before we move back to the fiction versus nonfiction. Are you familiar with the Juror 13 website?
Very lightly familiar with it. I've had a surface knowledge of it.
Okay, well, I've become involved with it, and I was just checking the chat room here, and you have quite a following from there. I've got quite,
oh, really?
Quite a few listeners on juror13.com is the website, and I found it to be a very good site with a lot of good information, a lot of very nice people and knowledgeable people about the current things going on in the criminal justice system. But anyway, they're on here and they're talking and they're very interested in you and your books, and we might get some questions through the chat room from them if they have anything to ask you. I'll
okay.
relay the relay it. Now back to the fiction versus nonfiction. I would assume, and I could be wrong, so you certainly correct me, but the although in fiction, sometimes I know you can create characters maybe based on people you've known and then based on some real incidents, but it's fiction. Now, when you're writing true crime, not only having to, you know, the extra research element and so forth, you probably can't help but get emotionally into the story. I mean, you're talking about
yeah.
death and not only the death of the victim or victims, but also their families and the impact on them and the, you know, the perpetrator, if someone is charged and convicted, I mean, their life is maybe deservedly, but their life is obviously changed and their family's life. I mean, there's a lot of things at play. And do you find yourself getting caught up with the emotions of the stories and what these people go through?
I can't help it. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they say you're supposed to remain detached, but that's not who I am, and I cannot do that. And so I've cried with victims' families. I've even cried with a member of a perpetrator's family. You know, the emotions are so intense and raw that you can't help it. And as a result, I think I've been able to communicate better who the victims really were and the kind of people they were, because I've seen the raw emotions towards them and how everyone felt about them and how great their loss was. And I think it makes me better equipped to relay that information to the reader. And I have a lot of victims' family members who have sent me thank you notes, some of them who years later are still in touch with me. I got an email today from someone who whose family member was a victim in a book that came out 6 years ago, and she still keeps in touch with me. And there's a lot of people like that, and that's part of the reward, really, because I hear how they're doing and how they are getting beyond their own personal tragedy and moving their lives forward. And that helps me feel not only feel better about the situation but and how I handled it with them, and also makes me have renewed faith in the human spirit that no matter how down we are taken, we can come up and we can revive and we can make more of our lives. And so they're very inspirational to me. Now, the thing that's probably worse for me is to spend time talking to a perpetrator, particularly one who has absolutely no remorse. That is a dark, dark place to go. And it needs spiritual repair when you're through with it, because otherwise it can get into you, and that dark can become part of you, and you can't really let that happen because that's a dangerous place to go.
Do you have to, well, let me, I don't want to go on a premise that's not accurate. If you write your book, even if you get emotionally involved, do you still try to do your writing from a neutral perspective, you know, just the facts, ma'am, type thing, or do you let your emotions, feeling get into your writing?
I think none of this can help our viewpoint seeping in ways we don't even realize.
Right.
But I do try to be very objective in my reporting, but sometimes it comes from a personal angle. For example, if I'm sitting in a courtroom, I'm not just going to be reporting on the words that are said in the courtroom. I'm going to be reporting on what I observe in the courtroom and have people's reactions to things, the jury's reaction to certain testimony. So it's not like straight hard facts, because I'm putting in a lot of this, the truth that enriches the story. But it gets very difficult to me to just leave a book like that and walk away from it. And I started something with the first book that seemed to make sense to me, and most people appreciate it. And I put an afterword in my book. It is the last chapter. It is a lot of my personal reflections on writing the story, the experiences I had covering the case, and lessons I've learned. If I've learned something from a particular crime that I think can help someone else not become a victim, I'll put it in there. And so that's what I do, and I get a lot of mail from readers about that one last chapter in the book. And they really like it. Every once in a while, I get emails from people who are not happy. Like just recently, someone wrote to me. She had read The Pastor's Wife, and she thought my book was very good, and she thought it was very objective. And then she read the afterword, and she was outraged because she didn't think Mary Wycliffe should have to do a day in jail, and I certainly made it clear that I thought it was an outrage of justice that she didn't serve more time. And she said that she was going to pass along the book, but before she did, she was going to rip out the pages of the afterword. And so, you know, you can't please everybody.
Let me just butt in here for a second. I have a question from the chat room. Could you please ask her how Tommy Lynn Sells affected her future style and her feelings?
Tommy Lynn Sells taught me an awful lot about how a sociopathic mind works and made me understand why although we may want to understand how their mind works, it is really kind of alien. And you can see it and you can map it out, but you can't really comprehend it. And you get to seeing those symptoms in other people. I mean, a lot of sociopaths walk around the earth and they never kill anybody. But they do leave their mark, and a lot of it is mark on other people's lives. So he taught me to notice that and to be aware of what was going on around me and to be able to better protect myself. He also made me more aware of my physical surroundings. I'm a far more cautious person than I used to be. But he also took me to a very dark place. And there were times when, I just cried when I was working on that book because his callousness towards his victims was just staggering. I mean, you couldn't believe you were looking at another human being saying those things and laughing about those things. And it was a dark place, and I don't know. I'm going to need some time before I sit down and spend that much time with someone as dark as Sells can.
Mm. So that was an experience that you weren't going to forget for a while.
No, I interviewed him 20 times. sometimes on death row and sometimes in the jail when he was awaiting proceedings. So it was a strange experience, and for the life of me, cannot understand how a woman was willing to marry him while he's on death row.
I just had the questioner just listen to your answer and made a comment. Diane, I can understand. He was pure evil, is pure evil.
So yeah.
That's her opinion. I'm getting some questions, too, that I'll get to in a minute. I obviously... in the news today with all the Casey Anthony, Haley Cummings stories and so forth, we're getting questions about that. So I'll get into your current project, or one of your current projects, I guess, about the Haley Anthony book in a few minutes, and I'll catch up on the questions being asked through the chat room.
Okay.
Are you involved, or have you been following the Haley Cummings case?
Well, I have only on the very surface of the case, Denny. My problem with that case is that it involves another child and another dysfunctional family, and I've got so much Anthony stuff in my head that I'm afraid to let too much of that in and get me confused.
Sure.
I know the basics, and I know who I'm most suspicious of, but I don't know all the details.
Do you find now? The Anthony case and the Cummings case are of course different cases, but they both involve young children, happen to be girls. We don't know for sure at this point what happened to Haley. We do know at least that although it hasn't been proved in court yet, we do know that Haley is in fact deceased. And I don't know. People ask me, and I see this in chat rooms and so forth. Are there more crimes against children today, or is it just that they're being, with the 24/7 news coverage and so forth, that they're being more reported? Do you think there's an increase in crime, especially crimes against children, or is it just a matter of the media and the amount of media available?
Denny, I do think that it was a whole lot easier to cover up crimes against children in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I think medical science has made it a lot of advancements. I think that on top of that, people were given more freer rein. There weren't child protective agencies like there are today.
Mm-hmm.
And there were also people were allowed to do things with their children, and they were considered more property. And I think it was easier to not leave forensic trail because forensics was so much simpler. So I'm not so sure if there's that much of an increase or if we just are better at catching these things.
Yeah, it's bothersome to me because, I guess it's our nature to have crimes against children even be even more repulsive than something against an adult. And when you keep hearing this, like a steady drumbeat of this stuff, it is...
Well, and too, you know, with the 24-hour news cycle that we have, all news all the time, or far more aware of it. If you went back 20 years, if a child disappeared in Maine, I'd probably never hear about it here in Texas. But I could be bombarded with that news now.
Mm-hmm. And I did a little research on the Hannah Mack case. Are you familiar with that one, the Texas girl?
Yeah.
And it's just nauseating. I mean, I read what happened when this bird made his appearance in court to enter his plea agreement. And, I don't want to get sidetracked on that. Anyway, let's talk a little bit, if you're willing, about your project for the Kaylee Anthony book.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, I'm correct that the title is going to be Mommy's Little Girl?
Yes.
Okay. And the last time we spoke, you were getting started. I think you were in the initial stages, and you do have a deadline. In fact, it's coming up pretty soon.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, like a scary.
Thanks
close.
For reminding me, Danny.
Oh, I'm sure you needed that, right? Now, is there anything you can tell us without jeopardizing the book or violating anything that you're not supposed to say ahead of time? But is there anything you can tell us about how that is going and if you're learning a great deal or the, kind of the status of that project?
Well, one, you know, we get things out in dribs and drabs in that, and sometimes in avalanches. But what's the real challenge is to try to put everything in context. And that is one thing I'm doing, and it's very labor intensive. When there are things like that diary that came out with 03 on it. Well, was that written in 03 or was that written this year? And where should you put it in the sequence of events? And there are a lot of other things that you get conflicting testimony from people about when certain things happened. I've noticed some massive confusion between June and July, and you read those interviews and somebody's saying June, and three pages later they're saying, oh man, no, I meant July, and the police are doing it, and everybody's doing it. So there's a lot to, and I'm making good progress with sorting everything out. And then, of course, I have interviews that have gone well for the most part. There are a few people that are a little nuts, but we'll, you know, it was, I called Dominic Casey. And I wanted to talk to him about, I knew he couldn't talk about confidential client information, but I wanted to talk to him about the information he shared with the police that was in documents that were released. And he told me he would not talk to me. He was very rude and condescending. And he told me that if I used his name or the name of his company, that he would sue me for trademark infringement and copyright infringement. Well, he was obviously full of it, and I knew that, but I double-checked it with the lawyers at my publisher, and they said, the man released a press release that had his name in it, so he was working on the case. From that moment on, he was no longer a private figure. So, you know, he can do whatever he wants, but he won't prevail. I thought that was just so bizarre, because here he is working for a company whose slogan is, access to knowledge is your right. And thinking,
okay,
what part of his own slogan doesn't he get?
Now, he's the one that's going to testify tomorrow in the civil deposition, isn't he? Is that
yes.
A, yeah,
yes, that is correct.
I wonder how he's going to find a way to weasel out of some answers.
I'm sure he's going to try.
I suspect that'll be interesting, I think. And his, well, I don't know if they're partners, but the other investigator, too, is supposed to, I don't know if they're both tomorrow or not. But
I think they're both scheduled for tomorrow. I don't think they're both still working together.
Okay. In fact, did I hear or read or something of couple of months ago, maybe, that there was a little difference of opinion between them as to how this thing played out? Or am I imagining that?
Yeah, there was. Dominic's story and Jim's story don't exactly go together perfectly.
Okay. You were talking a little bit about the mountains, really, of evidence here. I mean, there's documents and photos and the depositions and the interviews and statements. And it's almost mind-boggling to me, the amount. Now, do you have research help, or are you a one-person operation?
No, I don't. You know, I have a couple of people that I can call up and say, I can't find this anywhere. I've looked everywhere. You know, do you have any ideas, or can you look for me? And every once in a while, with a question here, a question there, I can get some help. But I don't have any. I don't have a research staff. And I really laughed when I'm watching this news story of a local television station, and they said, 400 more pages of documents were released today. Our staff is combing through them looking for pertinent information. I'm going, your staff? I'm doing this all by myself. Loan me some staff.
Now today I just saw, before we went on the air here a few minutes ahead of time on one of the stations, the more photos of Casey and the party girl mode. And these were...
Oh, yes.
Did you see those, the latest ones?
Oh, my heavens. Yes, the ones that Radar published, yeah.
Yes, with her necking with another woman and lap dancing. I mean, and I can't help it, Diane, and now I'm not close to this like you are, because you're into this thing, but just as a follower of the investigation, I can't help it. I can't bring myself to like this girl, Casey. I just can't do it. Stealing from your friends, stealing from your family.
Stealing from your grandfather in the nursing home.
Yeah.
I mean, how low does it go?
Are you having a problem? I don't mean a problem, but is that where you're leaning towards? I haven't seen anything positive about this girl.
She seemed to have been a nice girl up until she hit some point in high school, things went awry. And I don't, you know, today I was just, after looking at those pictures, I was wondering, well, maybe the whole problem is she became sexually aware and realized it was a good way to use people. I mean, that was just a wild thought that went through my head. Who knows if there's any truth in that or not. But, you know, something just slipped a cog. Like, you know, good student, no behavior problems in school, to nothing but trouble.
Yeah, constant. I mean, one thing right after another.
And some kids go through a period of rebellion, but this is a bit extreme. and she seems to be stuck there, Jenny. That's what's so troubling. It's like she never matured past that point in high school. She's still acting like a high school kid, even though she's got, she was a mother for a while. I mean, a lot of times that makes people grow up real fast.
Mm-hmm.
But
apparently
it doesn't seem
to
have done it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No. It's, can you comment or tell me what you think so far, as it stands now, and based on your knowledge to this point, of how the opposing sides are stacking up, the strength of the prosecution case, the defense? I don't know what the defense is actually going to be, but any comments on how you perceive the prosecution and the defense at this point?
I think the prosecution has a very strong case. You know, that a lot of it, yes, is circumstantial, but they've also got forensics to back it up. And, you know, sometimes it is a game of perceptions. And I think the perceptions of Casey is going to be very damaging to her in that jury room. And the lying, the not reporting the child missing for 31 days. And then you look at the defense, and quite frankly, you know, you've got a defense attorney with 3 years of experience who's caught up in this little arrogance mode where he likes to travel around with an entourage. The man even has a bodyguard. And when I got a little too close to the holy sanctified attorney, he slammed me into a stone wall. You know, I mean, it's nuts. It's like if I have all this bravado and I act like I'm real important, she's going to, you know, move. Well, I'm going to win the case. Well, that's not what it's all about. And he spends a lot of time talking about how that she's innocent, and that's not even lawyer talk, you know? Lawyers talk in not guilty. I mean, that's all you need. You don't need to go into a courtroom and prove your client is innocent. You just need to go in there with enough reasonable doubt that a jury will not be able to convict. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing, and he seems to have lost sight of that. A lot of clients won't even tell you what they think about their client, whether they're guilty or not guilty. And others, when they say it, they say not guilty, that you rarely hear innocent. It puts a burden on the defense that, you know, you keep saying she's innocent, so prove it.
Right, right. I've got a couple of chat room questions I want to get to before I forget. One is these pictures of Casey and her various escapades that were taken before Kaylee went missing. What do you think the chances are that they're going to be admissible or get into evidence? And number two is Kronk, the meter man, meter reader who discovered the remains, and then Padilla not wanting to pay the reward and so forth. Do you have any comments or opinions on either of those, the pictures or the crank situation?
As far as her partying, my first thought would be, before Kaylee was missing, it wasn't relevant. But then when you realize that she often took Kaylee to these parties, including the no-clothes party when she was dressed in an American flag, then suddenly her at parties becomes relevant because Kaylee was there at many of them. And particularly if you can point out the ones that where Kaylee was present, I think you've got grounds to show how little she valued her child, mm-hmm. which connects to the murder. And I don't know, is that sufficient legal grounds to get them admitted? I don't know. May or may not. It all depends on how it's argued and how the judge rules.
Sure. And Kronk? And not Kronk? Ward.
Poor old Kronk. I think he just had these visions of being the hero that finds Spotty. And, you know, he kept going back there and going back there. And eventually, well, he did find it. And it seems to me that he deserved his reward, and he didn't deserve to be castigated as much as he was. He's almost like another victim of Casey, indirectly.
I read in one of the chat rooms something about when he was denied, or I guess Padilla said he wasn't going to give him reward, and somebody said, there's nothing, he said that Kronk couldn't have been happy with that news, and they said, there's nothing worse than a cranky Kronk. So I don't know if he was cranky or not.
What's Padilla doing with the reward money? Buying the property where the body was found?
Probably. Down payment on that wood. I got another question.
Yeah.
Has Diane thought about the opening in her upcoming Anthony book? Perhaps a teaser for us. Maybe there's not time, but how about another quick show? Wow. I guess maybe some people would like to hear you back on as you're getting closer to the Kaylee book being finished or released or whatever. I don't know if you'd entertain that idea.
Well, I can gladly do it before it's released, which is November 3rd. But whether or not my life gets a little too tight before I finish writing it is, you know, it may or may not be.
Sure. Well, will you keep us in mind if you think you're going to have time?
I definitely will. Definitely will.
Have you back on. I'm going to jump here with a few minutes we got left. I want to make sure I address a couple of other things. Now, we've talked about your project with the Kaylee book, and that's Mommy's Little Girl, and you said the release, what, November?
November 3rd, yes.
November 3rd. When? What's your deadline to have the manuscript done?
May 1st.
Wow.
But in between those dates, I've got another true crime book coming out.
I was going to mention that. I just see that you got, so we got Anthony, and you also have a contract for a book about this Betty, how do you pronounce that, Neumar?
Betty Neumar, yeah.
The Accused Black Widow, and it just so happens that I did a show a couple of weeks ago, and one of the topics was Black Widow murders, you know, all these various people. So that's an interesting subject, and it seems there's quite a bit of that. Quite a few people who have been convicted or allegedly are the so-called Black Widow type murderer.
Yeah, well, I haven't done a whole lot of work on that book yet. I was supposed to be working on it now, and then the publisher asked me to do the Casey book. So that's sort of back-burnered, but I have another true crime that I've already written that is coming out September 1st.
Okay, what is that one?
That's called A Poison Passion,
okay.
And it is about a veterinarian who gives her husband a lethal injection.
And is that September? September 1st? Really?
September 1st, yes. And her husband had survived 5 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
But he couldn't survive 5 months of marriage to her.
God. okay, so that's already done, right? I mean, that's as far as the writing piece of it goes. Now you got Lucinda Pierce. Are you working on the third book for that series? And it's also under contract.
Yes, and wouldn't you know it, the third book, instead of going with a serial killer, I'm working on a really, really dysfunctional family. So, what a surprise. That's what a book list, was it book list or Kirkus? One of the review people on my Trophy Exchange book said that it shows that I've written true crime because I've really got the facts right. So that's good.
Would you say that you would fall under the category of prolific writer?
Yeah, I got a late start, and I'm trying to make up for lost time.
Well, you're doing a heck of a job. And the last thing I want to talk about was Molly Mullet. Now, Molly Mullet, I'll let you go ahead and explain Molly Mullet.
Well, Molly is a chemistry teacher turned investigator, and it's a more lighthearted mystery series than the Lucinda Pierce.
Uh-huh.
And in fact, there's a dog in the book named Crapper, which you gotta love that. And it all takes place in Texas, right here where I'm living in New Braunfels and in the little enclosed town of Green. And she makes a few trips to other places in Texas, but it's mostly right here. And I do have a second book kind of all drafted out as far as an overall narrative sketch of the book. But I haven't had time to work on it because I have to pay the bills and earn a living. And so far, no one's offered me money to continue that. So I'm hoping that I'll be able to find some time to squeak it in and write that book and get it out there and have my agent market it.
And Molly, I'm sure, is quite excited about that prospect.
Molly is just delighted. You know, I was a chemistry major, Denny, so it was easy to make her a chemistry teacher.
Mm-hmm. And that was probably fun to write, right?
Yeah, so, you know, and she also drives a Red Beetle. What do you think I drive?
I couldn't hazard a guess. Yeah, that's great. Diane, we're down to just under a minute before we get cut off here. I don't know where the time always seems to go, but it passes quickly when I have an entertaining, great guest like you. So what I'd like to do before we get shut off is thank you very much for being here, certainly, and the best of luck with your new book, The Punish the Deed, and all your books, and I ask you to please keep us in mind, and if you get a spare moment between now, and then even when your book comes out in September or whatever, we'd love to have you back on.
I would like that very much. I enjoy talking with you a lot, Denny.
Well, thank you, Diane, and again, the best of luck and congratulations on Punish the Deed.
Thank you so much. Good night, Denny.
Good night, Diane. Thanks a million. Okay, folks, we're just being cut off. In fact, we just got cut off, and the guest, Diane Fanning, new book, Punish the Deed, and it's available as of today, and you can check Diane out at www.dianefanning.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you the next time. Bye-bye.